All right. Hi, everyone. And welcome to the Guiding Light. what I'm going to do before I start sharing from the spiritual teachings of Ramana Maharshi is I'm going to play a song. And the song I have selected today is by The Fray. It is called Be Still. So today in the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, I am beginning on page 82 with the second devotee question on the page. And the question is, if the Atman has drawn the veil over itself, should not itself remove the veil? And we actually looked at this question at the end of last week, but the reason I backed up to it is because it's kind of where we needed to start the review this week in order to understand the conversation. But I remember last week, I quit calling this person a devotee and I started calling this person a seeker. You know, and it does say D in the book, which is what leads me to say devotee. But to me, there's a difference between a devotee and a seeker. A devotee has surrendered a little more, maybe a lot more. a seeker is seeking, so it's fair to call them a seeker. They're seeking, but they still want God or truth to somehow meet their criteria, meet their qualifications, be what they want it to be. And so what seekers tend to do is they try to fit the truth into a box rather than letting the truth burst the box. And that's what this person has has been appearing to do, that we were reading from last week. This person appears to have ideas about what God is, appears to have ideas about what truth is, and really seems to want Ramana Maharshi to answer in the way that this person expects it all to be. So that's why I chose to call this person a seeker instead of a devotee. Listen to the words devotee for a moment. You know, just contemplate that, devotee. Right? It's different than the seeker. Although the devotee certainly may not be self-realized, and in that way is still closing their eyes every day, you know, going into some type of awareness, watching awareness practice, and seeking. The devotee is different than the seeker because the devotee is devoted to truth, whatever it is. There's a surrender there of my ideas, a surrender of my expectations, a surrender of my way. There's just a pure devotion to truth, regardless of what it is. So again, even though the devotee may not be self-realized, a surrender has happened that hasn't yet happened with a seeker. So again, this particular person I am calling a seeker. And so the seeker says, if the Atman, you know, which we could call consciousness, has drawn the veil over itself, should not itself remove the veil? And Ramana Maharshi answers, it will do so. See, for whom is the veil? And we know this as self-inquiry, right? Self-inquiry is, you know, like if you have your eyes closed, and there are thoughts showing up, maybe thoughts about everything you have to do today and how you don't really have time for meditation, right? Then the way we practice is we look at that and we ask, what sees these thoughts? And we turn the attention towards the seer, away from the thoughts and towards the seer. And when we turn the attention towards the seer, we are being the devotee. You know, we are turning our attention away from the idea that I have too much to do today. And we are turning our attention towards the seer, being the devotee, just simply wanting to see it no matter what it is, right? Without any qualifications, without any criteria, without any expectations. And so that's what Ramana Maharshi is recommending to this seeker. You know, it's saying, you know, consciousness will remove the veil if you continue to look and see for whom is the veil, who sees this veil, right? Keep looking for the seer and the veil will drop. Okay, here's what the seeker says. So this is really starting new now because that was kind of a review. Here's what the seeker says. Why should I? Let the Atman itself remove the veil. So you can see why I'm not calling this person a devotee. Ramana Maharshi says, if Atman talks about the veil, then Atman itself will remove it. In other words, you're the one talking about the veil, right? So you need to look and discover what you are. One thing I think I keep commenting on because I keep noticing as I read both I Am That and the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, I keep noticing how many of the questioners are not really seeking truth. I'm not sure why they're there. They're not really seeking truth. You know, they argue too often with Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta Maharaj to be seeking truth. They want to hear the answers that they want to hear. And I, you know, although there's not a lot to say about this, I think it's important that we go ahead and contemplate that and really ask ourselves again, what is it that I want? You know, do I want to ask a teacher a question so that I can hear what I want to hear come out of that teacher's mouth? Or am I seeking truth? The seeker then asks, is God personal? Ramana Maharshi says, yes. He is always the first person, the I, ever standing before you. Because you give precedence to worldly things, God appears to have receded to the background. If you give up all else, and seek him alone, he alone will remain as the I, the self. So is God personal? And Ramana Maharshi says he is always the first person. And of course, person is a word that's not true. you know, so here's one of those situations where words are just being used. But when I close my eyes and I practice self-inquiry, God is that I that is aware of. You know, I am aware of. God is that I. Sometimes I've heard people on the spiritual path learn at an intellectual level something like, you know, we are God or I am God. And I have observed some people take that on in what they don't realize is an egotistical way. You know, I am God. But the I that's being spoken of is the one that sees that idea. I am God. Or it also would see the idea, I am not God. It's the one that would see any robust egotistical feelings that might come with, I am God, if misapplied. It would also see any feelings of helplessness and victim that may come with being a human who feels stepped on all the time. The thing I love about I'm going to use the word God now because that's the word that's being used in this conversation. The thing I love about God is that it sees all. It doesn't matter what mood I'm in, what frame of mind I'm in, whether I'm completely clear in meditation and at the point of only awareness being aware. That which is aware is God. You know, in our most ignorant moments, we've all had them, right? In our most ignorant moments, that which is aware is God. And in our clearest moments, that which is aware is God. So God is always here. And there's nothing that we can do to push it away. You can't screw up and get God to turn its back on you. It's always, always, always present. And it's always, always, always present as you. So once we become aware of that, once we accept that as true, we really have the opportunity to become the devotee. Because we can always look and see what's here that's always here. Sometimes when I'm in meditation, and of course, you know, like everyone else, my meditation skills increase with practice. So my meditations, you could say, are better than they used to be. But every now and then in meditation, I will, I'll appear to lose it. I'll explain why in a moment. That's impossible. But I'll appear to lose it. Lose my focus on awareness. Some thought will come in that will seem especially interesting, and I'll watch it for. I don't think I watch anything for a few minutes anymore. I think it's always less than a minute, but I'll say I watch it for some seconds. Let's say 30 seconds. And as soon as I get that engrossed in a thought where I'm watching it for 30 seconds, there's a total shift that occurs. And, you know, I don't know how to describe this shift except, you know, like a moment ago, I was in this peaceful, empty bliss. And now I'm in this concentrated, it really feels concentrated. I'm in this concentrated, distracted focus. So it's an entire shift in how I feel, right? And so because that entire shift of how I feel occurs, the next thought that occurs is I've lost it. You know, because a moment ago I was in this peaceful, free, unattached bliss, and now I'm focused and concentrated on thought, and everything feels heavier. And so the thought is, I've lost it. And what I've learned to do is when that feeling comes, when that idea comes, is just to look and say, what sees this? You know, what sees this concentration that happened on the thought? What sees this overall feeling of, I'm going to call it, falling out of bliss into a heaviness? And what sees this idea that I've lost it? And when I do that, what I instantly realize, instantly, is that it can't be lost. Right? And so instantly all of the distraction just fades in the light of that realization. And you could say, I'm right back. But it's not really that I'm right back. It's that it was never lost. You know? And the realization of that is the only thing. You know, it's just a matter of whether I had the realization or I temporarily let the realization be lost because I focused attention on something else. Temporarily. So I love the fact that, again, what's being called God here is that which is always here, that which cannot be lost. Therefore, I can return my attention to it at any moment. At any moment. It doesn't even matter how deep I appear to fall. If I appear to fall in some deep anger or some deep anguish, I just have to look and see what sees this deep anger. What sees this deep anguish? It's still here. It was never lost. There is no real veil. You know, and the seeker is saying, and again, I don't know what the seeker's issues are, what his particular life is, but let's say he lives a life of anguish for a moment. The seeker is saying, you know, in effect, I experience so much anguish. If God cares about me at all, God should remove this veil. And Ramana Maharshi is saying, look to see for whom there's a veil. Who sees the veil? Who sees the anguish? That's how you find God. Right? And it's always, always, always here. As the most personal, the most intimate. And again, personal is just a word that's being used here, and it's really kind of inaccurate. It's just coming from the questioning, really. But the most personal, the most intimate self. I cannot get more intimate than the I that is aware. The thoughts sometimes seem very, very intimate. At least they used to for me. They're actually starting to really lose that, which I enjoy. But they used to seem very intimate. When I used to sit in meditation and the thoughts, whatever the thoughts were, would start off. And listen to this, because this is really very funny. It's really a trick. When I would sit in meditation and the thoughts would start up and my attention would go to the thoughts and I would try and remove my attention from the thoughts and they would continue to go back to the thoughts, there was also this thought that thought is really all I am. I can't let go of thought because thought is all I am. Well, what sees that thought? What sees the idea that I can't let go of thought because thought is all I am? That's so important. You know, if you just believe a thought, you are kind of trapped in its experience. So if you believe the thought, I can't let go of thought because thought is all I am, but then that appears to be true. But if you question the thought by asking, what sees this thought? What sees the thought? Thought is all I am. What sees the fear that thought is all that's true? What sees that? Keep looking for what sees. And all of these deceptions fall away because that's what they are. They're deceptions. So if we look at the conversation again, I'm going to start at the top. If the Atman has drawn the veil over itself, should not itself remove the veil? Ramana Maharshi, it will do so. See for whom is the veil? Why should I? Let the Atman itself remove the veil. Ramana Maharshi, if the Atman talks about the veil, then the Atman itself will remove it. The seeker, is God personal? Ramana Maharshi, yes. He is always the first person, the I, ever standing before you. Because you give precedence to worldly things, God appears to have receded to the background. If you give up all else and seek him alone, he alone will remain as the I, the self. If you give up all else, and again, the means of giving up all else is paying attention to what sees that. It's not about repressing other things. What sees those other things? Just keep returning yourself to that, not question, but that looking. Inquiry is self-attention. Inquiry is looking. That's what inquiry is. So no matter what appears, no matter what appears, no matter what appears, look to see what sees it. The devotee says, the final state of realization is said to be, according to Advaita, the absolute union with the divine. And according to Vishita Dvaita, a qualified union, while Dvaita maintains that there is no union at all. Which of these should be considered the correct view? So it's like three different Hindu schools of thought that have three different philosophies about what truth is, right? One says it's the absolute union with the divine. The other one says it's a qualified union, and I don't know what those qualifiers are. And then the last says there's actually no union at all. And he says, which one is true? Ramana Maharshi says, why speculate as to what will happen sometime in the future? All are agreed that the I exists. To whichever school of thought he may belong, let the earnest seeker first find out what the I is. Then it will be time enough to get to know what the final state will be, whether the I will get merged in the Supreme Being or stand apart from him. For conclusion, but keep an open mind. Why would we want to make a decision about what truth is? Because then we're back to where, in order for us to be right, truth has to meet our qualifications. We don't know it when we make decisions about what truth is, but we put a stop to our genuine search. You want to put a stop to your genuine search? Just pick a school of thought and agree with it. You want to continue a genuine search? He calls it an open mind. I often call it stay with the I don't know and just keep looking. You know, when someone doesn't know an answer, they keep looking for the answer. When they think they know the answer, they quit looking. So, picking a school of thought, you know, regardless of what it is, and then saying, I know that to be true, is the surest way to stop the search for truth. Again, Ramana Maharshi says, why speculate as to what will happen sometime in the future? All are agreed that the I exists. To whichever school of thought he may belong, let the earnest seeker first find out what the I is. Then it will be time enough to know what the final state will be. Whether the I will get him merged in the Supreme Being or stand apart from him. Let us not forestall the conclusion, but keep an open mind. The seeker says, but will not some understanding of the final state be a helpful guide to the aspirant? Ramana Maharshi says, no purpose is served in trying to decide now what the final state of realization will be. It has no intrinsic value. That's pretty clear. No purpose is served in trying to decide now what the final state of realization will be. It has no intrinsic value. You know, so just quit. Just stop. Stop trying to have some intellectual understanding of what the final state of realization is. I mean, right now, you know that you're not at the final state of realization. That's really all you need to know, isn't it? Because then you know to continue the practice. Do you really need to know anything else? And I love in NTI, there's a line, I believe it's in NTI Luke, I'm pretty sure it's in NTI Luke, where it says something like, you know, don't stop the search for truth until you are the truth. It doesn't tell you what that is. You know, it just says, don't stop the search for truth until you are the truth. And I remember when I wrote that as a scribe, my feeling was, I don't know what that is, but when I'm there, I'll know. So as long as I don't know, right, then I need to continue looking. But the problem is if I read something in a book and then I think I know, I quit looking. Or I look for what satisfies my qualifications and I say, that's it. Right? The mind will find the evidence to prove itself right. So the best thing to do is to not know. And that's really hard for a lot of humans because, you know, a lot of humans identify not knowing with ignorance, when actually the opposite is true. It's thinking you know that is ignorance. So Ramana Maharshi says, no purpose is served in trying to decide now what the final state of realization will be. It has no intrinsic value. And the seeker says, why so? And now we have a three-paragraph answer. Because you proceed on a wrong principle. Your ascertainment has to depend on the intellect, which shines only by the light it derives from the self. Is it not presumptuous on the part of the intellect to sit in judgment over that of which it is but a limited manifestation and from which it derives its little light? How can the intellect, which can never reach the self, be competent to ascertain, much less decide, the nature of the final state of realization? It is like trying to measure the sunlight at its source by the standard of the light given by a candle. The wax will melt down before the candle comes anywhere near the sun. Instead of indulging in mere speculation, devote yourself here and now to the search for the truth that is ever within you. And you can see right there what a devotee is, right? Devote yourself here and now to the search for the truth that is ever within you. I mean, kind of what I hear in that is shut up and do it. Right? Just shut up and do it. There's too much talking about what it is going on. And of course, we saw that in the teachings of Inner Ramana too, right? If you read the teachings of Inner Ramana talked to me about my tendency to talk about the self, right? Just shut up and do it. There's a story about Robert Adams. Robert Adams went to see Ramana Maharshi when Robert Adams was a young man. And there's a story about how Robert Adams was in the room with Ramana Maharshi, and Robert Adams was sitting there quietly with his eyes closed. And Ramana Maharshi was talking to his attendant. And the attendant was complaining about things that were going on around the ashram. Because, you know, wherever you have a group of people, you know, you got stuff. You got gossip going on. You got people not getting along. You know, so the attendant is complaining about all these other people and all the stuff that's going on around the ashram. And Ramana Maharshi tells him to keep quiet. Do what you came here to do. Well, Robert Adams, who wasn't even in this conversation, was in the room at the time, but he had his eyes closed, and so he was in an open state of mind. And when he heard Ramana Maharshi say, keep quiet, do what you came here to do, he took that as guidance from his guru for him, even though Ramana Maharshi was talking to his attendant. And the story is that everybody there thought Robert Adams was a little weird because he never talked to anybody. He never got involved in the gossip. He never got involved with any of that. You know, he kind of stayed to himself and he spent all of his time with his eyes closed, kind of staying away from everybody else. Well, if you know the end of the story, you know that Robert Adams reached self-realization. You know, he basically heard the message, shut up and just do it. Right? Just do it. And we all know what do it means, right? Close our eyes and seek the source. Close your eyes and seek the source. Shut up and just do it. Easy, easy instructions, actually. Again, here's a very long way of saying shut up and just do it. Because you proceed on the wrong principle, your ascertainment has to depend on the intellect, which shines only by the light it derives from the self. Is it not presumptuous on the part of the intellect to sit in judgment over that of which it is but a limited manifestation and from which it derives its little light? How can the intellect, which can never reach the self, be competent to ascertain, much less decide, the nature of the final state of realization? It is like trying to measure the sunlight at its source by the standard of the light given by a candle. The wax will melt down before the candle comes anywhere near the sun. Instead of indulging in mere speculation, devote yourself here and now to the search for the truth that is ever within you. Shut up and do it. Right? And that is the end of that section, which is called Sadhana and Grace, which means practice and grace. And so now I'm turning to a new section called the Yanani and the World, which means the enlightened one and the world, the Yanani and the world. And the first question asked is the world perceived by the Yanani? And Ramana Maharshi says, for whom is the question? Is it from a Yanani or an A-Yanani? You know, is it from an enlightened one or an unenlightened one? Now, again, this is such wise teaching, so annoying to someone who doesn't get it. I mean, how annoying is that? You know, to go to a teacher and ask what you imagine, hear the word imagine, is a sincere question. You know, because you've been listening to debates, right? You've been listening to people who argue about whether the enlightened one sees the world or the enlightened one does not see the world. And you want to know the truth. So you go to someone who you trust is enlightened and you ask him, do you see a world or not? And then he comes back with, who's asking the question, an enlightened person or an unenlightened person? You know, that can seem awful annoying, maybe. You know, he's like, he's making fun of my sincere question. But what you don't see at that stage Although your question may have seemed sincere, it really wasn't. Because it was the intellect asking. The sincerest way to deal with a question is to do exactly what Ramana Maharshi is proposing here. Look to see who sees the question. You know, so right now, you know, we could all ask that question ourselves. We can say, hey, does an enlightened person see the world? I mean, I really don't know. I'd like to know, does an enlightened person see the world or not see the world? And then close your eyes. Ask the question again. I would really like to know. Does an enlightened person see the world or not see the world? And then ask, what's asking the question? What sees the question? What's aware of the question? Does that which is aware have the question in it? No. And the question just kind of dies. Because the question didn't actually come from you, the question came from the mind. And the mind loves these questions because it gives it more and more to think about. It keeps the mind appearing to be you. You know, what wants to know? What sees the wanting to know? Does the seeing want to know? No, the seeing doesn't want to know. You know, if we practiced in the way Ramana Maharshi is recommending, the clarity of self-realization would come much, much, much sooner than, well, I don't even know if much, much, much sooner is correct, because through the asking of the questions and trying to understand the questions, it's not going to come, you know? What if we just keep looking to see where the question is coming from? What if we just keep looking to see what wants to know? What if we be like Robert Adams? And we just sat there with our eyes closed. You know, what hears this? What sees this? What feels this? What's aware of this? What am I? What hears this? What thinks this? What sees these thoughts? I mean, if you just keep going at it, keep going at it, keep going at it, the clarity of what you are has got to come. The only reason the clarity of what you are doesn't come is because the attention is too much focused on the mind and outward. But by repeatedly turning the attention around, it's obvious what you are. See, that's the funny thing. It's obvious. So if you keep looking, you can't miss the obviousness of it. You can only miss the obviousness of it by not looking, right? By thinking about truth. So the devotee says, so again, Ramana Maharshi says, from whom is the question? Is it from the Yanani or the Ayanani, the enlightened or the unenlightened one? And the devotee says, from the Ayanati, the unenlightened one, I admit. And Ramana Maharshi says, is it the world that seeks to decide the issue about its reality? The doubt arises in you. Know in the first instance who the doubter is. And then you may consider if the world is real or not. You know, I also love that. He just gave this type of answer a while ago when another seeker asked, you know, which is true, that we merge with God that there's a qualified merging with God or that there's no merging with God. She says, first find out who the I is, and then you'll have time to find out the other answer. And he's really saying the same thing here too. He says, first, know who the doubter is. Later, you can find out if the world is real or not, you know? You know, the way I always hear that is, focus your attention on realizing the self. Once you realize the self, you'll know the answer to these questions. The truth is, the one who wants to know now is the mind. The mind wants to know so that it can decide. So that the next time it's around people who say the world is real or the world is not real, you can throw your opinion in there. Nope. I talked to Ramana Maharshi. He told me he definitely sees a world. You know, I know the answer now. Or he tells me he definitely does not see the world. I know the answer now. I mean, that's really all the mind wants. The mind doesn't actually want truth. It pretends to want truth, which is why I said it's not really a sincere question. You know, sincere questions don't come from the mind. Because sincere questions that seek truth, and the mind doesn't seek truth. So when you think it's a sincere question, you're just being deceived. It's the desire to know so that you can say that you know, so that you can think that you know. But it's not a sincere question. Is it the world that seeks to decide the issue about its reality? The doubt arises in you. Know in the first instance who the doubter is. And then you may consider if the world is real or not. The questioner says, The unenlightened one sees and knows the world and its objects, which affect his senses of touch, taste, etc. Does the enlightened one experience the world in like manner? And this might actually be a different questioner just asking the same question. It might not be a stubborn questioner, because I think that what the translator did was he took different conversations, different parts of different conversations, and grouped them under a heading. So this could be a different day, a different person asking the same question. And so we'll get another answer. So again, the unenlightened one sees and knows the world and its objects, which affect his senses of touch, taste, etc. Does the enlightened one experience the world in like manner? Ramana Maharshi says, you talk of seeing and knowing the world, but without knowing yourself, the knowing subject, without whom there is no knowledge of the object, how can you know the true nature of the world, the known object? No doubt the objects affect the body and the sense organs, but is it to your body that the question arises? Does the body say, I feel the object, is it real? Or is it the world that says to you, I, the world, am real? Well, that's both funny and true. I mean, if I tap this desk with my hand, the hand feels the desk. But the hand doesn't have the question, is the desk real? Right? What has the question, is this desk real? What's thinking about, oh, I learned the world is not real, but this seems so real. Could it be? You know, what is doing that? Not the hand, the mind, right? I remember in my contemplation of the seven steps to awakening, I came to a point where I came to see that I do not directly experience the world. You know, I used to think, you know, I'll take this package of rubber bands here. I used to think, because I can feel this and I can hear it and I'm touching it, I might even be able to smell it. Yeah, there's a smell. I can smell, I could probably taste it, but we'll skip that, okay? I can smell it, I can feel it, I can hear it, right? That I thought that meant I was directly experiencing the bag of rubber bands because I am touching the bag of rubber bands, right? But as I sat in contemplation of the seven steps to awakening and really deeply, deeply looking as I contemplated, you know, I came to see that the hand feels, the ear hears, the nose smells, but I see all of this. I mean, if I really close my eyes and really look, I am not feeling this. The hand is. I can see that. So this is not a direct experience. The body is feeling it, but I'm watching the body. Same thing with the smell. I can actually see, it's amazing, I can see like an object, that smell, that sense of smell, right? I can witness it and I can see that there's something in the nose smelling. I might even see the brain interpret it. You know, the brain might think rubber bands smell bad or good, depending on the brain. But I'm witnessing all of that. You know, I came to see that nothing that happens through the senses is actually a direct experience for me, not me, not I. I came to see that the only actual direct experience that I have is of myself. Everything is witnessed. Everything is at least once removed. Can't be any closer than that. You talk of seeing and knowing the world, but without knowing yourself, the knowing subject, without whom there is no knowledge of the object, how can you know the true nature of the world, the known object? You know, most people never think about what sees this, what am I, what is my nature. In fact, they just assume they're the body, right? I'm the one feeling it, hearing it, smelling it. And that's not actually even true. Well, Ramana Maharshi teaches, and at first it may not make sense, but after he teaches it enough and we listen enough, it begins to make sense. You know, the question really becomes, why would I bother to know anything else if I don't know what I am? Shouldn't knowing myself be first and foremost? And then after I know myself, then I can, if I want to, seek and find out what these things are that I know. But first, shouldn't I know the I that knows? Shouldn't I know the knower first? Because I am the foundation of anything I know. I mean, I know this bag of rubber bands through myself. I don't know it through you. I know it through myself. So you could say that if there's a filter to knowing this, I'm the filter. What am I? You know, what am I? Don't I need to know myself first before I can even trust my apparent knowledge of anything else? Because I'm the foundation, I'm the basis, I'm the ground of all knowing, literally. You know, it sounds so lofty that I'm the basis, I'm the ground of all knowing, but if you just pay a little bit of attention, you'll see that's not lofty, it's just a fact. So shouldn't I know the basis, the ground, the foundation before I try to know that which sits upon it? Now that's all he's saying. First things first. then worry about the second and the third, right? First things first. You talk of seeing and knowing the world, but without knowing yourself, the knowing subject, without whom there is no knowledge of the object, how can you know the true nature of the world, the known object? No doubt the objects affect the body and the sense organs, but is it your body that the question arises? Does the body say, I feel the object, it is real? Or is it the world that says to you, I, the world, am real? And the questioner says, I am only trying to understand the enlightened one's point of view about the world. Is the world perceived after self-realization? And I'll read this answer because I think we might already understand it. Why worry yourself about the world and what happens to it after self-realization? First, realize the self. What does it matter if the world is perceived or not? Do you gain anything to help you in your quest by the non-perception of the world during sleep? Conversely, what would you lose now by the perception of the world? It is quite immaterial to the enlightened one or the unenlightened one if he perceives the world or not. It is seen by both, but their viewpoints differ. So again, you know, seek what comes first, and then worry about this other stuff that you're asking about, right? So I'm going to mark it there, and that's where we'll begin next week. And next week, we only have half an hour because we'll have a satsang next week with John Mark Stroud. So I'll be here for half an hour next week for the guiding light, and that's it. And I am releasing the mic.